Coming up in a moment, we're speaking with Kevin McCracken from Starve the Beast 2021. That's the Facebook page.
You know what they're going to do, that you know what they stand for, you know what their ideology is. The problem is the right of politics, if you like, which doesn't exist because they've all cuddled up with the left. The right represents freedom, it's meant to anyway, and it doesn't exist. And because everyone's being so nice, and we, in that way, we kind of deserve to die, because next year is going to be the most horrific year in human history, and people aren't prepared to believe it, because they're determined to look at the world through the eyes of a decent person, as Sev Zelenko says. You're looking at the world through the eyes of a decent person. You can't do that when you've got communist murderers on the other side. You can't do that. You've got to look at it like they look at it. They're evil. Everything they do and everything they say backs that up. And if we can't see that, you know, we are all dead. That's how I see it. You know, this requires a very strong, dare I say it, masculine response. They have to step up. The men have to step up at times like this and be men and stop being wussy about it, because that's what we're being at the moment, and that's why we're going to die, and our children are going to die. If we put up wussiness against communist, or whatever you call it, globalist, communist, technocracy, whatever, fascist, it doesn't matter about the word, they're evil.
Hello, Kevin. How are you today?
Good. Yourself?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for joining me. The other day when I was out on the farm, and I think you were out on your farm, and we were talking about the banks in America that are starting to fail. And I asked you the question, do you think it'll happen here? And you said, most definitely. Who do you think might be the first banks to fail in New Zealand?
I think the first ones that will be looking will be the Co-op banks, because of the fact that they are within New Zealand. Most other banks are Australian or have an association with Australia, which are bigger banks. But certainly the smaller banks seem to feel the pinch more.
Right. So you're talking about like Trustee Bank and the Cooperative Bank. There's one up in Whangarei here called the Cooperative Bank. I was going to put my money in that, and because I thought, oh, I'm going to get out of bank, because they were, I don't know, something annoyed me about them, and I can't even remember now, but I'm glad I didn't. I found it really hard to get a blooming account open, and I'm glad it was hard, because now I'd be panicking that I've got my money with the Cooperative Bank. So I'm still with the old, I won't say which bank, but I'm with New Zealand Bank. But so the first ones to go, do you think, will be those trustee bank type things? And would that be like the Taranaki Savings Bank, or those sorts of banks, and the cooperative banks, and
co-op banks, possibly the building societies.
Right.
If in America is anything to go by, it's the smaller banks that are feeling it. But in saying that, quite a large bank, in America, that still went under.
So, why are they feeling it? What's causing them to fail?
The interest rates are rising for a start.
Right.
It's where they've been investing their money too. But the problem with banks is they actually create debt. They don't actually loan money. But when you put your money into the bank, they only have to hold, I think in New Zealand it's 8%. So they lend out the rest.
Good grief.
So if you want to get money from the bank, there's only a limited amount that's going to be accessible.
Is that what they call fractional reserve banking?
That's exactly right, yes.
Right. Yeah, I've heard of that, but I never really understood what it was all about. So I find the whole money thing all a bit strange, really. I actually went and drew out some money. I had quite a reasonable amount in there, and I actually drew it out when I heard. I just had this feeling that, you know, I should get my money out and put it in other investments, and so I sort of did that. But I went in, you know, a few weeks ago to get some money. I think I drew out $1,000 for something I needed to buy, and that was all right. And then I was doing another transaction on the Tuesday, and the most I could get was, the lady said in the bank, oh, no, I can only give you $2,000. And then she said, oh, but you can get up to $800. And I thought, that's funny. I got $1,000 on the Saturday, and now 2 days later, I can only get $800. What's going on? She said, oh, well, a lot of people have been, we've had more more withdrawals than we've had deposits. And so, and I said, well, I need, you know, this X amount. And she said, oh, well, okay. Well, so then she, you know, was able to get me quite a bit more, but not what I wanted. And then I had to go and draw out an amount with up to $800 at a time. And I'm, you know, stuffing $20 bills in my pocket. And I've got people, you know, sitting down behind me, and, you know, I could be knocked on the head. It felt very risky, actually, getting a reasonable amount of money out. But anyway, thank goodness I haven't got it anymore. I feel so much better getting it out, even though I'm not getting the interest on it. It's pretty small amount of interest anyway, but I just had this feeling that I should get my money out, and so I've only got a small amount in there now, and I guess I'll just have to, just break an investment and put it into the bank when I need it. But fortunately, I can live quite cheaply. But so, what sorts of things do you think people should be putting their money into? Should it be Bitcoin, or should it be buying gold, or gold coins, or gold? Silver coins, or should they be buying building products or something like that? I mean, the only trouble with building products is what if you need to buy some tires for your car, and you all you've got is some bags of rice or some nails or something, or screws that you've collected and then put your money into, or you've got some gold coins or something, how would you think that you would go about that if you were going to be doing something like that? Or do you know anyone that's doing that?
Yeah, so I mean, I've said to people for the last 2 years to take your money from the account, from your bank, and only leave in what you can afford to lose.
Right.
Because of the fact when you put money into the bank, you no longer own it. So it's no longer for you to your control or anything like that. And now that the government has passed the laws of bail-ins, they said they're no longer going to bail out, everything will be a bail-in. The security is just not there, and realistically, it never has been. It's false security.
Could you just describe what the difference between a bailout and a bail-in is?
So, a bailout is when the bank gets into financial trouble, the government will use. They say it's not taxpayers' money, but around about it is, and so the will use money to bail out the banks so that the bank stays afloat, because the bank is just a corporation. So now the government says, I'll no longer bail out. We pass the law saying we'll bail in. So the government's made it allowable for the banks to, if you have a deposit in the account, they can take a percentage of your money and buy shares in the bank so that the bank will stay afloat with your money. So realistically, they've taken your money to float their bank, and you are owners of useless shares.
Is that law now?
My understanding, it is law now, yes.
Good grief. So, yes. So a bailout is when the government uses our money, our tax money, to bail out the bank, and a bail-in is when the government uses our money to bail it. So how come the banks get all this favouritism? Why don't they just let them fail and we just draw our money out before they fail, of course? You just got to time
banks,
it right.
Yeah, the banks and the government, they are combined together because the Reserve Bank, for a start, if the banks fail, the government is tied to the banks. But the worst thing of the lot is we think that the Reserve Bank is running the country and that's where I get our money from and so forth. Mm. But in actual fact, the IMF, International Monetary Fund, they are the ones that I realistically run this country.
Good grief.
Because of the money that this government has borrowed from the IMF, if you borrow money from anyone, you're indebted to that corporation.
Of course.
And they own you.
So that do the IMF, the World Bank, it used to be called, didn't it? They take security in the country for the money they loan the country. What sorts of things would they take as security?
That they, to my understanding, they take the security on all the people as a, yeah, so that everyone that pays tax, they become the security. So that's why beneficiaries, and even on the pension, that's why you pay tax, is because then you're actually part of the security.
I see. So the more, I could never understand that.
Yeah, the more people that pay tax, the more money the government can borrow, because you become you're the security.
Yeah, I could never understand why they give you your pension and they take tax out of it. Why don't they just give you a slightly lesser amount and leave? So they obviously have to do that for a legal reason. Eh?
Yeah.
So they can use that money.
That's right. And, there's always an alternative.
And it's showing the World Bank or the IMF the collateral that we've got. Look, we've got all these taxpayers. So this is right. Okay. So would they? So that really they're putting up our sovereignty, aren't they? What happens if we default on our loans?
Well, it's sweat equity is what they're taking from us.
Right.
That's what it is. It's all labour. Yeah.
Right. Oh, okay. Gosh.
What people don't realise is the government is a corporation, and the corporation borrowed this money, not the people. So it's only going to go as far as the corporation, because the corporation is the liability.
So when did New Zealand become a corporation? Has it always been one, or did that happen, in the last 50 or 100 years?
Yeah,
1986. Ah, yes. I think, is that the Constitution Act?
That's exactly right.
Okay, I've heard Ian Wishart talk about that. He wrote, I must read his article on that. So was it legal what the government did in 1986? That would be the Longy government, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I would say, I'm pretty sure it was the Labour government.
Was
it
legal?
And it wasn't. No, it wasn't legal, no.
Good grief. So they've got us in hock to the IMF.
Basically, so, yes.
Right.
And the United Nations, yep.
And so how can we get out of that deal? Because we didn't really agree to that. So how do we get out of that as human beings, as living men and women? How do we get rid of that system? Well, can we, or are we stuck with it?
Yeah, for a start, the corporation is all it is. And a corporation only deals with other corporations, just like acts and statutes, they're only for corporations. So what they've done is they've taught us to believe that we're a person, because a person is a corporation. So then they want us to identify as a person, so that's how they can fine us, that's how they can have control over us. And so that's why we are not a person, we are people.
So, okay, so where do you, what reference do you have that can back up that we are, that a person is a corporation, not a living man or a woman? Where do you go to find that info?
So that's in the legislation, Legislation Act of 2019, and the interpretation, states that, a person, body, soul, body corporation, unincorporated body.
Body corporate. Funny language, when you think about it?
Yeah.
A body.
Yeah. Body. Well, that's right.
And a corporate, a corpse.
Yep.
It's really strange. There's a whole lot going on and we don't realise what's going on. We use these words and don't know the meanings of them, and we don't really know what we're doing, what our parents have got us into with that birth certificate.
Well, that they were deceived.
Yeah. Now, I think it was Heather Mary Pennycook, she came on my program and she talked about living law. That's L-O-R-E. And she mentioned a few of those things as well. But really now, right now, what I'd be thinking if I was, the average Joe, which I am, out on the street, I'd be thinking, okay, I really don't want to have any money invested in the bank if it's all looking a bit dodgy. So I really need to get it out and get it into something else. So what would you recommend? And what are you telling people they should do?
There's two ways to look at it. It's whether you want to create an investment from your money or you just want a storage of wealth. So if you look at gold and silver, that is considered a storage of wealth, a bit like a hedge fund really, but it's tangible. I tend to like things, if I'm going to invest in something, I tend to like to have something physical rather than invest in somebody else that's holding something for me. So if you're going into gold or silver, I'm the sort that tends to want to hold it rather than, but when you go into investment, it's the same principle.
You're risking it like the bank thing. You're investing in the bank, don't you?
You're investing in somebody else.
Yeah.
You're investing in corporations. Same with a share market. You're investing in somebody else's corporation.
Right. So you think we need to get out of that mentality of investing in other people, and we need to start taking responsibility for the wealth we create.
Yes,
and spreading our eggs around.
Yes, yes. It's like at the moment, one of the biggest things is energy.
Right.
I mean, that even when it comes to if people can find a way of creating or how to make petrol or diesel and so forth.
Yes.
Invest in getting logs, getting firewood, and just storing it.
You can buy logs, can you? Ring up an outfit and say, I want you to deliver me a truckload of logs?
Yep. For those that have got farms, they've got the land to do
lifestyle blocks.
Yep. So they can actually create their own. And so what you're doing is you're investing your money in your sweat equity.
Yes.
And something that you can actually use later on.
Yes.
Because you know anything to do with energy is going to be valuable.
Yes, that's very good. All right, so that's good. So you could buy. Let's look at that. So you buy some logs, and then you get them delivered, and then you circle them all up, and split them, and then just lay them out to dry, and then you stack them away, you know, for the year after next. How long could you keep, say, pine logs for without them sort of getting really, you know, really sort of not that good to burn? Like, do they last forever or? A few years or 5 years, or I suppose if they're out of the weather, they'll be all right.
Yeah, the main thing is that when you get logs, just make sure you chainsaw them pretty much straight away, because the greener it is, the easier it is to cut.
Right.
But then you can just store the rings for as long as you want, because the log splitter won't struggle once it's dry. It's only the chainsaw that struggles when it's dry.
Oh, so you just ring them up and then let them dry out as rings.
Just let them dry as rings. Yeah, they take up less room.
Yeah.
Yep, and just split it later date if
split
you want.
Split it later. Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. So that's good to know. All right, so we can become log suppliers. And but the trouble is, if we're all doing that, then the price of firewood's going to go down, isn't it? Because if there's a lot more competition.
Like most things, well, everything runs on supply and demand.
Yes, yes, I suppose it does. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
but the
so,
problem we have is all the Fonterra, the hospitals and corrections, they are getting our firewood logs, or what we term as firewood logs, and they're chipping them and they're burning those logs instead of coal. So the firewood logs are actually becoming less and less.
Oh, I see. So, is that what they're doing? So, coal's a good, coal's a cracker. It's nice and hot. It's very cost-effective coal. And it adds some CO2 to the atmosphere, which the plants need to grow. And then they give off oxygen for us. I don't know what the whole thing's all about. Anyway, I'm getting sidetracked. So, okay, but selling firewood is pretty seasonal. So in the summertime, they might not want to buy my logs, buy my firewood. So what other things could I invest in that I could trade?
That's why when you're looking at logs for firewood, it's an investment.
Yes.
Because you're investing in it. It's not your everyday job where you'll process it, then sell it. You're actually investing in it, and that's the difference.
And so how long can you keep them for? How long will they last? If they have to be undercover, don't they?
No. They can be outside. They just keep going until they start rotting.
Right, and then when they're rotting, it's hopeless. You know, no one wants to buy rotten firewood, do they?
No. So a lot of people put it where there's always sunshine,
right?
So that they're not, so they can dry out.
Gotcha.
Yeah, keep them dry if possible.
Okay, got it. All right. So that's one. What other things could we use to trade with?
Well, for those that don't have a lot of money, one of the things I suggest is 5 and 10 kg bags of rice.
Okay. Is there any type of rice that would that's one better than others?
No, no. Because if it gets to the point where people become hungry, food will be the new commodity.
Yes.
Nobody will be interested in gold or silver if you're hungry.
Okay.
Yep. So rice, because it stores for so long, it takes up not much room, bit of water, bit of heat, and you can create, a meal.
Right.
So. Yeah, that to me is if things go as bad as what the 1930s depression was, I'd recommend storing bags of rice.
So we could look at that, couldn't we? We could look at what families did to survive during the 1930s depression, how they survived.
Yeah. That's right. But the beauty with us is we have the internet to see. Or potentially see what's coming, whereas in the 1930s, when that stock market crashed, people didn't see it coming.
No, so they weren't prepared. That's a good point. That's a good point.
Yeah, they were. Yeah.
So
we can now.
Yeah, we can now. Sorry, I cut you off.
Yeah, no, we can now prepare for this. We can, potentially see what's coming. The financial system is crashing, and it's crashing big time.
Okay, so you've got let's say you're Johnny, and he's got he's got 20 grand just sitting in the bank in the savings account, and he's got a couple of grand or maybe 5 grand in his check account. What would you advise him to do?
And he's got
a house with a mortgage on it.
I would definitely get the money out of the bank. I would invest a certain amount, definitely in gold and silver, being a storage of wealth. The longer you leave money in the bank, with inflation increasing at the rate it is,
you're chucking it away, aren't you?
You are. Inflation is the worst tax you can ever have.
Yeah, I guess you're right. And, makes sense.
Yeah, and inflation is created by the government.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the higher the inflation, the less the government actually, it gobbles the government debt. So they like inflation.
Right.
And that's they're not in a rush to put up interest rates above inflation.
Okay. All right. So we've got all the money out and we've got some cash. How much would you leave in if you were, just a family of four or something?
Yeah. I mean, that depends on. Personally, I think everyone needs to use cash and not use their bank cards, credit cards, and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
We need to go back to using cash.
Right.
Which means that basically you'd take most of it out.
Right.
You'd only leave enough in the bank that you're willing to lose if something happened.
Okay. So for some people that would be $100. Others it might be $500 or $1,000 or, $10 or $20 or something, I suppose. It just depends on what you can afford to lose. And the rest of it you take out.
Yep.
So what are they going to do with it? They've taken it out. And then what? Just buy things like we talked about before, like buy some logs and split them up. Even if you got someone else to split, to ring them up for you, you could do that. Get someone with a chainsaw to pay him 20 or 30 bucks an hour and he could do that, couldn't he? And then you've got something sitting aside there. You've got something that you can trade with. It's an investment for the future. And you can buy your rice, your 5 and 10 kg, did you say, of rice?
Yeah.
Right.
The problem you've got when it comes to getting somebody to do the work for you with firewood is by the time you've paid for the logs, the chainsaws, the logs, the fuel,
it's not worth it.
All the running costs, no. Yeah.
So you've got to do it yourself. You've got to get the wife out there with the chainsaw, and she does it.
Yeah.
While you watch the footy.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's not worth in a lot of respects. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So we've got to do it ourselves. Sweat equity. Got that. Okay. So we've got some cash. So we've got a bit of cash. And what would you just put it all in a tin and hide it somewhere, or would you have it in different places? I guess everyone's got their own idea of how they do it. So just we won't go into that. But so you don't, you obviously wouldn't want to leave it all in one place. So you'd want to invest it in some sort of commodity like your firewood and your, and what about building products? What about, what about galvanized nails and screws and things like that? Would that be useful, or timber? Say if you had some timber and you're out, you knew how to store it properly so that air went under it and it wouldn't rot. Would buying some timber be a good thing? They always seems to go up in price, doesn't it?
Well, that depends on if you're buying it at today's prices, which is inflated prices, and then in a year or two's time, if the economy crashes and people have employment and so forth, well, then chances are that a lot of your building materials are going to drop in price.
So you need to buy a mill and mill it yourself.
Or it's a case of, looking ahead to see if the economy crashes, building materials are going to drop in price, I would say, because people can't afford to build houses.
Yes, that's right.
So then it's no longer an investment, that money. It's,
so they'll be giving away wood just to keep the stock turning over.
Yeah, or people might start cutting that wood up for firewood.
Oh, yes, of course. All right. Okay, so we've got... So now what about the cash itself? How safe is the cash going to be? When it, could they devalue the notes and just say, we're not going to accept them?
So that's, So I would say there'd be a certain time period to take in your notes if they were going to turn into a digital currency.
Yeah.
But that's why you wouldn't, you might keep maybe 10-20% in cash, and you'd put the rest into, like I say, gold, silver, because it's a storage of wealth.
Right.
Put into items that you think are going to be necessary for yourselves, or you know that you could trade if things got bad.
So where can you buy gold? I can imagine going into a gold merchant and getting ripped off. You know, there's 24 carat and 18 carat. You know, I wouldn't know what I was buying, and how would I know? Like what sort of gold? Do I got gold bars or silver bars, or how do you do it?
Trade Me seems to be quite a typical place to buy it.
Trade Me.
Just make sure that when you're buying gold or silver, it says 0.999.
I'm going to write that down. 0.999. And what does that mean? 0.999.
That's the purest you can get of any metal.
So does that mean it's 18 carat or 24 carat? Or what's a carat? What does that mean? Is that the size of it?
They say that 24 carat is pure gold, but the true way of knowing is when it's stamped 0.999, because then you don't have anything else in it.
But what if we had some dodgy guy that just puts 0.999 on all this gold that's hardly got any gold in it, or just looks like gold, fool's gold? Could that happen?
Yeah, depends. I mean, there are ways of actually testing to make sure that
You go like this.
Gold.
In the cowboy movies, they chew it, and if it doesn't break their teeth, then it must be gold.
Yeah, or get out a magnet and make sure it doesn't stick to it.
Okay, all right. Do you do that when you buy gold?
No.
So you buy off. So there's reputable guys on Trade Me. Can you just walk into a gold or silver place? And if so, you know, are there sharks out there? Do you have to be careful where you go?
I mean, like everything, you've got to be careful. I like New Zealand Mint.
Online. Yeah.
For New Zealand Mint. They're very good, yeah. There are quite a few bullion dealers up and down the country. And, they have a reputation. They just make sure that they belong to the I think it's the Bullion Society.
The Bullion Society. Okay.
Yeah. Just to make sure they're reputable.
Well, how about we give the Trade Me dealers a plug? So do you know any that you think would be worthy of, and that you know people that have traded with them and they've didn't come unstuck? They got their silver in the mail or their gold in the mail or courier to them or however. Who would you recommend? We'll give them a plug.
I know Alan Kilpatrick in Dunedin. Yep. He's very, really, really good.
Alan Kilpatrick, Anyone else?
Yeah. I can't remember the name of the firm, but they're in Picton,
and, okay.
Well,
that's good. Or we can look that up. And so they will sell you these coins with 0.999 on it.
Yes.
And so, like, So how much is it for an ounce of silver, roughly? Like, if I was to buy an ounce of silver, what would that cost? And what would be the minimum purchase if you were going to do a transaction like that?
Well, the way that New Zealand Mint is that you have to buy, I think it's 25 one-ounce coins of silver at a time, and the minimum is 1 ounce of gold.
25 coins, is that an ounce of silver?
So that's 25 ounces.
Oh, 25 silver. Ounces.
Yeah, 25 one-ounce coins, yeah.
All right, and that's silver?
Yeah.
And what about gold? What was it, that's 1 ounce?
Yeah, 1 ounce gold.
And yes. How many coins is that?
Just one.
Oh, one coin.
Yes.
Oh,
yes,
okay. One. And so that's 25 ounces of silver. And how much is it per ounce for silver now?
Through New Zealand Mint, I think it's about $45 per ounce of silver.
That's pretty cheap, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, silver is it's good value.
Yeah.
Yeah, really good value.
So 25 ounces, what is that in grams?
I can't remember what it is in grams now.
Would it just arrive in a courier pack like you know, something like that?
Correct, yes, yep.
Okay, so it's just going to arrive in that. And do you need to get it insured? Or
they
you don't
take care of all that.
They take care of it, all right. And then with the gold, how much an ounce is gold at, say, today's price if you're going to buy some?
It's around $3,000 an ounce.
$3,000? I could have bought some in 1984 for 81, I think it was, for $369 an ounce.
So why didn't you?
Oh, my goodness. Why didn't I buy it? What was I doing starting a footwear business? I could have just gone put what I had into some gold and sat on it and then just worked as a truck driver while my gold went up. Now it's worth just over $3,000 an ounce.
Yes.
I thought it was about $2,000. So that's going to, one coin is going to cost $3,000.
Yeah, around, yes, yeah.
That should be easy to hide, shouldn't it? Easy to lose too, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
Blimey.
There is a, when you're buying gold and silver,
yeah.
It's remembering that the, like when it comes to gold, if you buy a 1 ounce coin, it's around, let's say, $3,000.
Yeah.
But if you get 10 tenths of an ounce coin to make up that 1 ounce, you'll probably pay about $3,400 for those.
For one coin?
No. So for 10, one tenth.
Oh, I see.
Of an ounce
coins. Oh, okay. So you'd probably get 10 coins, and that's going to cost you $3,400.
Yes, and the reason for that is because it'll cost you more initially.
Yep.
But if you need to sell in a hurry, or you just need a small amount, you can just sell one small coin, and you don't have to try and find somebody to buy a whole ounce.
Oh, okay. So you could sell. So one coin is going to be worth your $300.
Yeah. So if you buy 10 one-tenths, it'll cost you about $3,400.
$400. Oh, okay. So it's going to be $340, the actual investment in that.
Yeah. So basically, but if you're going to buy, if you're going to sell just one of those one-tenth of a coin,
yeah,
you're going to sell them for over $400 each.
Because no one can buy them singly. They have to buy 3,400. So, there's a way. So it's like when you buy something in bulk and then you put it into smaller packages and you can sell that for a higher rate. Oh, that makes sense.
Yes.
So you'd sell that for $400 if it was just the one coin.
Yeah, there's more people that can afford a smaller amount and build on that than they can a higher amount. Even though the higher amount is cheaper, a lot of people afford that, so they spend a bit more and get a small amount, but that's still affordable for them.
Like, let's say you had $100,000, what sort of a rate per ounce could you buy gold at if you had $100,000?
The likes of New Zealand Mint at $3,000 an ounce, that is their rate.
So if you bought $1 million worth, it's going to be $3,000 an ounce.
Yeah, that's why they have a spot price,
right?
Because that's price is the base price for worldwide.
Right, and do New Zealand Mint get paid on the transaction, or do they get paid per ounce? Their fee, because they'd have a fee, wouldn't they? A handling fee.
Well, yeah, I don't know. Okay. I don't know how they do it. All it is they'll just have a price for an ounce.
Yep.
And purchase per ounce.
Okay, so and then whatever price. So say if it's $3,400 for 10 gold coins, 0.999 on it, and then it's courier to you. What's the courier cost going to be for sending $3,000 with $3,400 worth of coins?
Yeah, that depends on the insurance that you need to post it.
Would you do insurance, or would you just wing it?
I think for that it's about $14 to send it within New Zealand.
Without insurance or with insurance?
With insurance, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yep. Well, that's nothing, isn't it? $14.
Yeah.
Yeah, the beat's going down and getting it.
Well, when you're dealing with New Zealand Mint, they don't have smaller denominations most of the time than 1 ounce.
Okay. So if we...
You've got to go into Trade Me to get smaller denominations.
But then you're going to pay a higher rate, aren't you, per ounce?
Yes.
Right, gotcha. Yes. So you're best to deal with the big boys. Is that right?
If you can.
If you can afford to, yeah. Okay. So now we're looking at silver. Silver, you can buy 25 coins from New Zealand Mint, say, and they're $45 each, so that's going to be $1,125 is going to be the purchase price. Does that sound right?
Yep,
plus $14 for courier?
Correct.
And that will go in just a little bag like this. Just a little envelope. It's like almost just slightly bigger than a DLE. NZ Post and sealed air. Rural delivery or whatever delivery. It would be more for rural delivery? Probably would be.
It's only another $3.80.
Oh, right, a little bit more. Okay, so $3,400 for the minimum purchase of gold gets you 10 coins. And that's going to be, is that going to be an ounce? Bit over an ounce, eh? Bit over an ounce.
That's
an ounce. Yep. Yep. 10
one-tenths.
Oh, sandfly. And the... so with the silver, sorry, I'm a bit thick on this because I've never ever looked at this. I thought about, I must have bought some gold, but you know. And then for 25 coins, it's going to be $1,125 for the minimum purchase, and plus $14, maybe $17 to get it sent to you. Okay, and then I guess you just hide it under the pillow, do you? Under the mattress? That would be the worst place to put it, wouldn't it?
Yeah, no. I'd recommend to buy a small safe ticket and bolt it to the concrete.
Yeah, bolt it to the concrete buried in the concrete. I have those ones that are underground. Just hope it doesn't flood. I suppose it doesn't matter if it floods, does it? It's not going to rust, is it?
No, exactly right. Yep.
Right. Okay. That's good. Yeah, and okay, so we've got gold and some silver. We're not going to put all our money in there. We've got some firewood. We're not going to. That's sort of seasonal, so we're not going to put all our money in that. But we'll put some of it in, some of our investment, you know, our time, sweat equity into that, and we could buy food. That would be. You wouldn't want to buy potatoes because they'd probably go off. So rice is the one that would last. How long would rice last for?
I would estimate in the bags that they have around 5 years.
Okay, that's good. So you wouldn't want to put too much into it. Someone said to me that they would buy diesel because that's, if you keep it out of the sun, that lasts a long time. But what do you think about that for an idea? That can last 10 years, I reckon.
Well, in today's prices, if you think that diesel is going to continue to go up in price, which is quite possible to happen because the likes of Russia and so forth, they are reducing their numbers of barrels coming out of the ground.
Yes.
Which means it's going to lessen the supply, which will be increasing the demand, which will put the prices up. So if they continue to do that, diesel will go up in price. But if you're possibly going to look from the point where you're going to make your own diesel.
Okay. And there's ways you can do that. Plenty of options online, isn't there, as to how to make your own diesel?
Yep. Yep. It's a case of if you actually invest in, if you purchase, you know, a lot of diesel and store it in 44 gallon barrels.
Yep, the 200 litre ones, or 250.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, you can do that. But then if people said, oh, I'm going to start making my own at a fraction of the cost, then you've thrown a lot of money into something that, you might be better off
learning how to make it.
Yes, use your money to actually learn how to make it.
Good
or
idea.
Purchase what to make it yourself.
And then you could so just keep the oil stored, couldn't you, whether it was waste oil or whether it was some cooking oil. You could just keep that stored for, you know, for years, couldn't you? And then you just need a, you just got to find, you know, just have to be able to make a catalyst, don't you? Heat it up and then you have a catalyst. So there's plenty of ways online people can learn how to make diesel. So that makes sense to me. And I also think, I don't think it's legal to store, mind you, legal. You can see why they don't want you storing diesel, because it means you're totally self-sufficient and they don't want you self-sufficient. They want you living in the smart cities, owning nothing and being happy. But So you're not legally, as far as the government's concerned, you're not supposed to have more than, I think it's 1,000 litres or something like that, or it might be a bit more than that, I don't know. So storing large amounts of diesel you wouldn't be following the rules, put it that way. But storing large amounts of waste oil and large amounts of cooking oil, I think that'd be fairly safe. I don't think there's any rules against that, is there? Oil. Yeah,
but one of the things is that when you've got diesel, storing the diesel, people have said that you can get a bug in it to make it go off.
Yes,
but I've got drums here. I've been here for 2 years, 3 years.
Yeah,
and I've never had an issue storing it. As long as it's airtight, I had a problem.
Yeah, and keep it full.
Yeah,
decant it into smaller ones, so don't leave it, because I think with our boat, if we have the fuel full to the brim at all times, you never get the bug. But if you've got an empty tank, you get condensation in there and you might be able to get a bug that way. But surely if you get a bug, you could just just give it a zhuzh up, you know, whatever, and just redo it, hey, just, you know,
I don't know.
Yeah,
don't
I'm sure know. You could, I'm sure. Now, but about petrol, that won't last long, will it? That goes off all the time, doesn't it, really quick?
Yeah, but petrol when it comes to petrol, the key with petrol is if you buy a 91 octane, that goes off very quick.
Ah.
But if you buy 100 octane, which 100. We have in the South Island, we have 100 octane in the South Island.
Petrol, 100 octane.
Yep, even 98 octane, the higher the octane, the longer it lasts.
Octane, okay. So that'll last longer. How long would 100 octane last in a 250 litre drum?
I've never put it to the test how long it lasts, but I know that the 91 goes off a lot quicker than what the 100 octane does.
Yeah, you'd want those in steel drums, wouldn't you? Not those plastic ones. Or no, they do put it in plastic, but they put alcohol in those plastic drums, those blue ones.
Yep. They just expand and
track. Yeah, so they must be okay. And obviously keep it out of the sunlight, I would think.
That's one.
Because they expand and contract, don't they? Because people are going to need... Okay, so petrol, wow. What about electric chainsaws? A mate of mine's got a whole bunch of those Bosch electric chainsaws. He swears by them. They're 58 volts. He reckons they won't be able to buy petrol and it doesn't store very long, although he doesn't know what you've just told me, so I'm going to tell them about that. The 100 octane or the 98 will last longer. What about electric chainsaws? Oh, goodness me. Boy, you'd be better off with a lemon crosscut saw, wouldn't you, and get you and your son or your wife out there either side of a log. At least you know it's not going to break down on you.
Yeah, well, that is true. So in some respects... quite possibly. The only thing with those electric chainsaws, I mean, they don't nowhere have the power that a petrol chainsaw has.
No.
That is one downfall. You either learn how to make petrol, which you can do. You can make petrol.
I suppose it's just that, what do they call it? It's a still, isn't it? A fractional still or something, isn't it? Is that what they call it?
Well,
refractory or something.
You're making ethanol.
Oh, right. Ethanol.
So you can still make your own petrol. It's just because petrol's been cheap enough over the years, people have never, all the old technology, people have lost it, and they need to go back to actually the old technology where they actually made it themselves.
Right. My old dad, he's passed away now, but he was born in 1921, and so he grew up and, you know, went through the Depression and everything with his family. But he had and during the 1930s, he had a Model A Tourer, and he said that he used to start it up on methylated spirits because he couldn't get petrol. So I guess all the petrol was going into the war effort, you know, being shipped up to the islands in drums, I suppose, to fill the tanks, because I think all the tanks, everything was diesel, petrol, wasn't it? They didn't really use diesel so much. And and during the Second World War, and so they couldn't get it, but they could get kerosene. And so Dad said he used to run his Model A Tourer on kerosene, but they had to put methylated spirits in it to start it. And then once it was warm, then they'd turn switch it over and run it on kerosene. Pretty cool, eh?
Yeah.
So do you reckon you could run your car on kerosene? Like, is it easier to make kerosene? What would be, and could you run your car on kerosene or not?
No, I wouldn't think so, because it's not explosive enough for a petrol motor.
Right, but yet the Model A was, the old flathead Model A Tourer, that was a petrol motor. That would run on kerosene.
But the compression ratio you've got now on your cars is very different to old Model A's.
Oh, okay.
All fuel injected and so forth now.
Oh, yeah. So probably just reject it. Hey, the fuel injector would reject it.
Technology has changed so much.
Right.
And the power that they had back then to the power that we produce for a car today, very different.
And so what about cars that have got, they've all got computers in them. So, you know, people talk about an EMP strike or, you know, that could knock out your cars. So do you think we should go out and buy some old cars so we can just run, just a carburetor and they don't have, you know, there's no computers in them? Like, would you recommend that? Or not?
Well, I mean, these EMP strikes, I mean, is it a case of they're only going to knock your computer out if your car's running at the time?
Oh, is that right? Oh, okay.
Well, that's how I would see it.
No, I didn't know that. I thought they all just wouldn't work. Oh, okay. So can you take all the stuff out of it? Like, can you strip the computers out and rewire your car and just run say, your truck, you got a 2015 truck that's, you know, got a computer chip in it. Are you able to rebuild it so that it doesn't need a computer chip?
You'd have to go back to carburetor.
It's
a fuel injected system that requires the computer.
So where would you get a carburetor for? You know, that'd be pretty hard, wouldn't it? You'd be best to just buy an old truck, 1970s or something, if you could find one.
Right.
That's probably why in America they got all those old trucks and they pay people money to get them crushed. They don't want you having old trucks.
No, they wouldn't want you at all. No.
Yeah, right. Okay, well, that's fantastic, Kevin. So Kevin McCracken, Star of the Beast 2021 Facebook page. And do you put a lot of that sort of stuff up there, or what do you mainly put up on Star of the Beast? What normally goes up on there? Is it a forum? Is that what it is?
Sorry?
Is it a forum where people can share ideas, or is it where you just post things?
It's mainly just where we can post things.
Right.
And it's mainly, like the name says, it's how to starve the beast. Yeah, how to starve the government of funds. Just so that they cannot control us. If they don't have the funds to operate, that means then that they cannot do anything. It's like the councils. The councils borrow all this money based on how many ratepayers there are, and if all the ratepayers stop paying the rates, well, then they can't fund what they've borrowed. So then that causes all sorts of problems for the councils.
Yes, and I've noticed that the councils aren't really putting the money into real infrastructure, are they? They're putting it into these smart cities. They're putting it into, cycle lanes and blocking off roads and putting coloured tiles down and big making it so you can't drive in these areas in your main town, trying to turn main normal roads in the city into malls, and you can't drive in them. So obviously, you know, they're wasting our money on these things, which, and they're actually, what it does is it destroys local business in those areas because there's nowhere for the customers to park. And then they have a really heavy system of meter, we used to call them meter maids, but now they're terrible. They're out there and they're putting a ticket, they've got the chalk in hand and a little notepad to write your ticket, haven't they? And so that's just revenue gathering. But that, to me, what that's doing is destroying retail businesses.
Yes. Yep. Mm. Yep. And the worst thing is that every council is a corporation.
Yes.
And what gives corporations a right to do what they're doing and dictate how they're going to change our lands?
Yep.
Realistically, if you know the government, the councils, they're all corporations, and we wouldn't listen to McDonald's if they told us what to do. So why are we allowing them to dictate how things are done? It's the same with the police. Police are a corporation.
Well, let's have another. Would you come back and talk to me about those things? Because that's fascinating. But this whole idea of getting a bit concerned about having cash, and I know other people I speak to, you know, having money in the bank. It's not really cash, is it? But it's money in the bank, and really it could be a very dangerous place at the moment to put your money in the bank. And just put in what you need to do a transaction. You think that's a better idea? So you obviously need a bit of cash, but as you say, only enough, only what you could afford to lose. So that if you had, say, you know, $10,000 in the bank, and you could afford to lose it, well, you'd probably keep 10 in there. Especially if you had, you know, quite a high turnover of buying and selling stuff, you know, during the month. So that sounds. Very good. Okay, so we know we've learnt an awful lot about the gold and silver. That's really good. Buying a bit of rice. You've got your firewood for, you know, that's another good idea. Anything else you can think of that you could invest in?
Yep.
People could invest in?
The number one thing that people should invest in is themselves and their knowledge.
All right. Could you elaborate on that?
So in other words, most times it's our knowledge to be able to see what is around us that we can invest in. So realistically, if we can see a need, and we should be able to fill it, and that's how we invest. And that's what most people do. If they see a need, they'll fill it, and that becomes their investment.
Right. Okay. So you've got to look, what do people need? What is something that people are going to need in the future?
Need.
So that's where we should be thinking all the time, shouldn't we? Entrepreneurial. What will people need and invest in that? And you definitely have multi streams of income and investing. Multi streams instead of just putting all your eggs in one basket. You know, like if you're an engineer and you're building boats or trailers or you know, building cabins or something like that, if everything all went down the toilet, you'd probably be out of business pretty quickly. So you need to have other things happening that people are going to need, even when times are tough. So I suppose, what about market gardens or something like that? Would that be a good thing to do? Or do you think you'd be better off just...
Well, I mean, with the weather conditions changing, maybe it's a case of build a glass house and start growing food in there. Going to be in itself too.
Okay, that's a good idea. I was talking to a mate the other day and he said, you know, you don't really need to do a glass house. You can actually just have a shed and then just have a plastic roof on it, corrugated plastic roof or whatever. And he said that's good enough to grow things in. It doesn't need to be, you know, the full hog glass house. You just got to be able to regulate the temperature on a hot or a colder day and just have a roof. Would you agree with that for growing vegetables and things like that? Tomatoes?
Yeah, totally. Just need the sunshine.
So it just needs to come. So really you just need a roof that's sloping, facing the sun, and you don't really need to worry about spending all that money on expensive glass or plastic panels or whatever. You could just put whatever you've got, some old second-hand building materials around the outside of it, couldn't you? And then you've got yourself a shed.
Yep, just simply the plastic corrugated sheeting. That's all you need on the roof.
Brilliant. Well, look, hey, what I was going to talk to you about just before you go, I've held you up for a lot longer, and I really appreciate that. Speaking with Kevin McCracken from Starve the Beast 2021. That's the Facebook page, Starve the Beast 2021. Make sure you get over to that and have a look and see what Kevin and the team are up to. You can see down the bottom there, I've got Neil Oliver, and Neil Oliver said that he had a friend went in to draw out some money, and they wanted to know what he was drawing, what he was going to do with it, and he just couldn't believe it, and they didn't want to give him his money. This is in Scotland, in a high street bank in Scotland. So obviously there's trouble on the way, isn't it, when they're doing that to us? You know, they're trying to keep all the money in the bank, aren't they? But when they do stuff like that, that makes me feel like it's time to get it out.
I can see there's going to be a run on banks.
Yeah, I think it might have started. I think that might have started, you know, a few weeks ago, people getting their funds out. But, you know, for them to come and say, oh, we can only give you $2,000.
Exactly.
We would need some time to get that amount, they said. Oh, what are you, a bank or what? No wonder they don't rob banks anymore. There's never got any money in them.
But realistically,
they do ram raids at petrol stations. Oh, we could invest in cigarettes, couldn't we? What about we buy a whole bunch of cigarettes? Oh, that'll be illegal soon, won't it? Smoking.
Yeah, but when you look at the system, you know, when you look at the money or the fiat currency, you know, you do call it a currency, and it's the flow of money. And then when you look at a bank, it's like the real bank that contains that currency and it directs the flow of the currency. And that's all the bank is. It's just like the banks of a river.
People say, I hear these people say, because I'm a bit of a dummy when it comes to money and stuff like that. So what does fiat mean? And how do you spell it? Fiat, is it fiat currency. What does that mean? And how do you spell it?
F-I-A-T.
F-I-A-T. Oh, well, it must be terrible because I had a fiat once and just kept breaking down. What do they say? Fix it again, Tony. I had a Fiat Chroma. Oh, the cam belt broke. Cost me a fortune. Bent all the valves.
Or if you look at the New Zealand legislation of the Reserve Banking Act of 2021, and they call it legal tender. All our notes are legal tender.
Legal tender, okay.
But the interesting thing is that when it comes to coins, it's money. So there's a difference between notes and coins, because a note is a worthless piece of paper with some ink and a few numbers on, which represents a promissory note. But whereas a coin is, it has metal, and all metal has a form of value.
Okay.
So stock
up on some coins, you reckon? What, some 50-cent coins, or those $2 ones feel quite heavy?
Every coin has copper, and even if it's got nickel, it's still got more value in the metal than what a piece of paper with the numbers on it has.
Oh, there's another thing. You could collect brass and bronze and copper and lead and stuff like that. I've got quite a bit of lead around, actually, and that's worth about $45 a kg at the moment.
So
buy some lead.
Depends on how much room you've got to store all that amount for any value.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and you've got to go and collect that stuff because it's too heavy, isn't it? So would you just stock up on some $2 coins? You wouldn't waste your money on keeping $100 notes, would you? Because they could just turn into $50, couldn't they, very quickly, if things got nasty?
Yep.
Right.
So realistically, if you're going to be looking at coins, you'd trade $2 coins in for silver.
Okay. Because don't bother with that. Just buy silver.
Yeah. The reason for that is if you have $45 and $2 coins, it takes up a lot more room than 1 ounce silver coin.
Gotcha. All right. That's fantastic. Kevin McCracken, Starve the Beast. Thanks very much, Kevin, for joining me. We'll see you next time.
Yep. No, thanks for having me.